This is the Change Management Podcast by the University of South Wales. My name is Jonathan Deacon, Professor of Marketing in the School of Design, Digital and Marketing, and I'm joined by my colleague Phil Harfield from the Faculty of Creative Industries. Phil is an expert in design thinking. Hello, Phil.
Hi, Jonathan. Good to see you again.
And you. In Season 3, we're exploring the concept of design thinking, how it can apply to business and how it works in practice. We discuss how design thinking can help any organization become an agile one. In this episode, we'll be discussing how we foster creativity amongst our teams. We'll explore strategies for creativity that serve as a checklist for leaders who want to create a culture where ideas flow, encouraging failure as a breeding ground for innovation. To help us discuss these issues, we'd like to welcome our special guest, Sophie Evan Hughes, who is a user experience manager from Confused.com. Hello, Sophie.
Hello, nice to meet you.
And you. Before we go any further, we just need to clear up a little bit of the terminology around this, I think. When we talk about user experience in the context of design thinking, we often use the term UX. So, good place to start, perhaps. Tell us what your role as a user experience manager involves.
My role is quite varied as a UX manager. I've got a design background. So I started as a digital designer and then went into UX, where I could see a sort of area in the business that wasn't really being done internally. So I could see that some projects were being done through external agencies and user research was being done that way. And I thought there might be a gap there to learn and get those skills in-house. So because of that interest, the organization allowed me to go into that field and learn more and start bringing in user experience and UX thinking into the company. And over the sort of last 5 years, we've just kind of built on that. So we're trying to get design thinking and everybody in the company really thinking about the full user experience, no matter what their job is, whether that's someone, you know, as a developer or someone in finance, they all have an end user. So they all need to be thinking about their user and their user experience. So on a day-to-day, the UX manager role is a lot to do with product design, marketing design, and working with various teams. We're seen as sort of a delivery and a support team. So we work very closely with lots of teams around the company.
So your role really is across the organization. It touches many, many touch points, both internally and externally.
Yeah, that's right. So we're not sat within one particular team. I mean, the team itself has to be located in one way. So we are within the marketing team. But in terms of how we work and how we operate, it's very much across the company. So say if we took something like car insurance, for example, we work with, you know, the SEO team on how design and UX can help with the SEO needs, or the same with social, perhaps, and then all the way through to how that product journey looks and then how those emails work. So thinking about the full customer cycle and how UX is involved in every stage.
And so, Phil, this is also about customer journeys and how we use the customer journey to inform our customer experience activities, yeah?
Yeah, I think what Sophie described there, that kind of, you know, non-discipline or non-compartmentalized culture is really, you know, a key thing, and that kind of multidisciplined thinking, not I'm the gatekeeper of my own knowledge, but sharing it is really positive in terms of, you know, to understand that full customer journey or that full customer experience. That's one of the risks that you are just thinking, right, from a marketing perspective, what do I need to do? Is my user different from the interface designer? I think that's something, obviously, current contemporary thinking around design is broadly understood, that we can't compartmentalize this, our thinking on this. We have to have that full journey understood. And, you know, design thinking and user-centered design and UX design all kind of preach from this same songbook, really, of a holistic understanding is really what we need. And then we can focus in our individual needs.
So from a kind of a business modeling perspective where I might come from, instead of just looking for the outputs, this strikes me that what we're trying to do is shape outcomes rather than outputs. You know, we want our users, be they internal or external, to have a smooth and value-added journey through the organization. And when that user kind of uses the touch points, if you like. Am I right in thinking that way, Sophie? Is that how we do it at Confused.com?
Yeah, so we definitely have to look at the various different touch points. And it's not us saying we know what's best for user experience in this particular area. We have to work with those teams. They have a lot of knowledge in those areas. So again, looking at product, for example, so if we're talking about a form that somebody needs to use, there are experts in those areas to say, this is how it's been used at the moment. Here's where the stumbling points are. How can you help us improve that? And then there's a sort of collaboration effort involved there and lots of knowledge sharing to get to a point where we are best serving those users. Generally, it's all about problem solving. And then often it's about new ideas. You know, is there a new way that we can fix this problem, or there's a new problem that's come up that needs a new solution?
So I can certainly see the creative element coming through with what you're saying. But you mentioned a word a moment ago, which I think is really important here and also very difficult for many organizations to handle. And that word is sharing. You know, and sharing for me, you know, is about that culture. Phil, how do we create an innovative culture? You know, we're wanting to bring in all of the great stuff that we've been discussing around design thinking. And here we are discussing UX, but that's all dependent, isn't it, upon a creative and innovative culture. So yeah. You know, tell me how I'm going to do that in my organization.
There's probably a few myths that might we want to dispel about this idea of cultures and innovation cultures. You know, I guess the classic, you know, Google office with the ping pong table and the slide and the, you know, there's a few cliches around what an innovation
you've
culture
clearly been into my office at home here, haven't you?
Yes. I think we're in reality, you know, culture is driven by cultural drivers. So in a competitive marketplace, this means beating the competition, means keeping up with changing marketplaces. So an innovative culture is pretty much characterized by a tolerance of failure and a willingness to experiment. But this has some paradoxical kind of, you know, narrative in it. So if you're willing to experiment, you probably want to do experiment within some rigorous discipline, i.e. UX, or user-centered design or design thinking. If you want to have a collaborative culture, you pretty much, you know, and you're tolerant of failure, is perhaps demands perhaps an intolerance of incompetence. or if you want to have some kind of atmosphere where we feel psychologically safe, or where we're open to feedback and criticism, and we may have to have a sort of a culture of honesty that's, and we're being reflective of ourselves and responding to feedback in a positive way may require us to be empathetic with our colleagues. And that's where, you know, cultural values of tolerance and inclusivity and transparency all become to the fore, really.
Want to empower your teams to think differently and solve complex problems? Start your design thinking journey today. Search USW Design Thinking.
And that, Sophie, depends to a large extent, I guess, on you know, the human factor here, bringing into the organization people that are innovative, that can create that culture, that ongoing culture of creative thinking and creative thought and experimentation and so on and so forth. So in Confused.com, you clearly have an innovative culture, but tell me about the people involved. Are they sameness or are they different? You know, what do they bring to the table?
So we've got, luckily, a very varied team. And when I say team, I mean organization. The background of Confused, we used to be an Admiral company, and it was instilled very early on, it's all about the team, the team, the team. So it's not one person's success, it's for everybody. And that has continued through. So as we get new people join the company, they get educated about this culture. And more often than not, they've already sort of expressed that that's a way that they like to work anyway. So it's all about, as you said earlier, being agile and sharing. We have got, you know, agile methodology, so basically continuous improvement. So I think having that sort of framework or that embedded in the company means that nobody's afraid of real criticism because it's constructive.
Many listeners will, I'm sure, remember the great words of Tom Peters, who in business strategy and business modeling is one of those names that crops up frequently. And when he started to talk about innovation within organizations, he spoke about this idea of when you're building a creative culture, when you're building a creative team, you know, employ difficult people. Don't employ the easy people, you know, because easy people tend to just say yes and they will agree with what you're trying to do. Whereas the difficult people will ask those difficult questions. So, Phil, you know, do you have illustrations, any examples of difficult, not me, I know we work together and I might be difficult at times, but.
Well, I think that idea of Saifu was alluding to about collective responsibility and being a positive force. So it's not collective guilt and responding to feedback as a positive force for innovation. I think how that relates to like bigger organizations like Confuse, you know, the idea of your personal values aligning with organizational values. And we've all worked for organizations where we put on hold our creativity. We don't put in the suggestion box the great idea we have because we're not aligned with the cultural values. So I think that idea of organizations being transparent and stepping up and communicating their values clearly is really what drives collaborations. Otherwise, there's a danger of, I guess, collaboration gets confused with consensus or, you know, the idea of group thinking where leaving poor quality decisions unchallenged is because that's the role of the managers, that's the role of the strategy givers. That's a danger, isn't it? So creating an environment where candid debate doesn't equal confrontation equals, you know, a positive force.
Yeah, I think what you said there as well about being transparent, that's really key, not just on a project level, but the company is very transparent now in terms of how things are going in terms of sales and what's going on with trading and things like that. So really letting the whole company know what's going on, being transparent there allows you then to feel free to be transparent in actual project work as well. And because you know how things are going, you don't feel like things are being hidden from you. So I don't know. I just think if it's from a top down level, it really does help, you know, on the front line, so to speak.
I'm sensing then, you know, our listeners thinking about how they may integrate some of this thinking into their organizations. And I'm thinking about, you know, the kind of key ingredients that we might need here. You know, we're baking this UX design thinking cake and we need some key ingredients. And I'm hearing things like, you know, this isn't a top-down kind of process. This is a shared process. You know, you Sophie, you used the words both sharing and transparency. Now, that, you know, the words which I'm sure in some organizations are quite alien, to be frank. We're building up that picture. Phil, anything else that we think we need to put into our recipe to create a culture of creativity?
Creativity is a much misconstrued word, really. And so that main ingredient is we perhaps need to challenge our individual or, you know, misconceptions about what creativity is. So creativity equals artistic endeavor, you know, isn't the case. So, you know, it's an inherent trait in people. It's something you're born with. No. So I think from someone who teaches design thinking, you know, the reality is conceptual skills, thinking skills, abstract and divergent thinking is something which you can develop through practice, something you can develop through use of tools and, you know, practice. So it is born of some characteristics, you know, being reflective, being persistent, being curious and inquisitive. You know, those attributes are something we strive for and they're something that really are in demand by industry. And that's why I think design thinking and all design-related creative thinking is in demand.
I think as well, you know, nearly every book I pick up around the creative thinking agenda starts with something like, you know, creative thinking is a free and infinite resource for an organization. You know, it's free and infinite. You know, why aren't we using it more often then? You know, that's the curious question, isn't it, for some organizations?
I think there's something in that. And it depends how long you've been at an organization. So you can get very bogged down in the day-to-day and then creativity can become stagnant. So it's really important to make sure we're doing things to remember to be creative almost. And because you get, especially if you work in-house rather than agency, you might get to know something so well that you're always thinking about functionality rather than an idea outside of the box. So there's all sorts you can do, really. We do work with some external agencies, which is really nice because you get a fresh perspective. It's actually a bit of a collaboration. So It's not like the external agency is imposing things on us. We share lots of knowledge and they will come up with some ideas that we hadn't perhaps thought of. And it really encourages everybody to start thinking about new things. And the other thing is if we do some internal workshops, it's a lot easier, you know, when you facilitate these in person, thinking about things like the Crazy Eights exercise where you've got a minute to do one or less than a minute to do one idea and then you move on. And it lets people just kind of forget about all the, how are we going to do this? And then they just start thinking about just new ideas. I think there's lots of things that you can do to try and renew creativity, especially if it's, people have been in an organization for a while.
And I think what you've just said, again, I mean, you're saying so many wonderful things today, but I think what you've just said to me has a resonance as well, that we're actually talking about not just digital things, we're talking about physical things as well. Creativity in this sense, you know, building this culture, or I would much prefer to call it an ecosystem, I think, of creative thinking. Building that is also about getting physical sometimes, you know, using post-it notes, you know, using the whiteboard. You know, Phil, I know you use a lot of very physical kind of activities when we're doing our design thinking exercises.
Well, I think it's things that extract these ingredients in your ingredient list, you know, things, you know, like personal relationships. What networks do you have? You know, that's part of your creative persona, your social networks, where you do, what stance you have on, what political views you have, you know, what civic engagement, what charity work you do, what sports you know, all these things are what make you a person, an individual. So good employers shouldn't separate that, you know, your persona as an individual from your day job. And I think that's as the narrative around what work and what fulfilling work looks for and what purposeful work looks like, particularly post the experience we've had the last 18 months, you know, with now digital has really made a step change in us rethinking perhaps what our work-life balance looks like. Now we're working at home. What does productivity look like? What does trust with a boss look like? Trust me and I'll be responsive and give you the productivity you seek from me. So I think all these conversations are really coming to the fore at the moment.
And the one thing you haven't touched on there, Phil, which we need to talk about, the F word. We need to talk about failure and failure's role in being creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sophie, how do you must embrace failure.
We've had a CEO now for about 4 years. So she was somebody who knew how to embrace failure and knew what to do with it, empowered the entire organization to start looking at their areas, what can they do to improve their areas, and encouraging this sort of talk to each other. Don't become a silo, don't work here because there might be another team over there doing exactly the same thing as you. So that's why I know we keep talking about it, but sharing is so important because it means you're not doubling up on work and everybody's efforts are in the right place.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. Failure does not sit well in traditional, in inverted commas, organizations. You know, those conversations are well, let's push that to the back of the cupboard. Let's not even invite that. So I think a proactive organization that has those transparencies is, okay, this is where we're failing. This is what this is what this means. You know, is your job at risk on the bottom line? So I think that kind of being honest means you can get feedback in response to that. If you're just getting feedback from perhaps falling sales, it's probably too late. So where design thinking and, you know, being more proactive around this means the failing early as possible and iterating as early as possible kind of raises questions of when do we intervene? When do we have enough data? When do we have enough insight to do this? And that's the kind of the role of, I guess, teams that are sending out their tentacles to find out what's on the horizon, you know, what issues, what problems are out there that we need to respond to as early as possible.
Yeah.
And this is when, you know, when I'm working with startup companies, particularly as well within the tech or the fintech sector, you know, we talk about this concept of failing fast. Fail fast, get it over and done with. Let's learn from that. But it's that bit about learning, I always think, is quite an interesting proposition, because if you're not kind of comfortable with failure, the process of learning can be quite difficult as well, can't it? Because how do we learn? You know, we, as you say, Phil, you know, we tend to have metrics which measure failure against usually some sort of financial metric rather than failure as a positive learning thing. So in confused.com, Sophie, how do you handle that process of failure and learning from it?
So there's all sorts, really. If we're talking sort of on a project level, first of all, I have to manage the risk. So you kind of have to go into it knowing that something could fail and knowing what to do with it when it happens. So you can kind of prepare yourself for it. And when coming into a redesign that we're sort of in the middle of, in order to get approval for that and allow that to be signed off that we're going to do this, there's a chance it might fail, but we've got ways that we're going to be able to fix it and fix it fast, like you say. I think that'll get buy-in from executive level much more if you kind of shown how you're prepared to overcome that failure. So yeah, as I think you mentioned earlier, it's about testing and iterating and building on it. So as long as you've got those things in place, you can actually fail fast and then change it and know what you need to change to get it to be more successful.
How might we then, reward might not necessarily be the right term here, but how can we, you know, how can we celebrate innovation in an organization? How do you celebrate that innovation within Confused.com?
So I don't know really if it's rewarding innovation. It's more about rewarding the outcomes. So as a company, we've got these, it's called fun money, and it's a way that teams can let off some steam, go together and, you know, have an afternoon off. And because we've got that, we know that we're enjoying our work. We've got the chance to do that. And it kind of recharges you and you can come back to it. I guess it just comes back to if you enjoy what you do, you do it better. All of these little things that we've got within the company allow you to take yourself away from it for a little bit, come back, and then you've got some new ideas. In terms of rewarding innovation, I think those little things in itself are rewarding teams. And especially if we do get a successful outcome, they are very proactive in celebrating these little wins as a company. And again, it comes down to transparency. So every little win is shouted about, and that makes you feel good and that makes you want to continue.
And I think that's really, again, very important where we think about what that support means in the organization, you know, sort of celebrating that approach. Because let's be honest, in the world that we're now entering, the post-COVID-19 world, we've spoken about agility already today several times. We're going to need to be agile. We need to move fast, which means failing fast, creating, you know, these cultures, these ecosystems of being able to look at the world in a different way. Phil, organizational leaders, we've kind of alluded to the fact that there are some organizations out there that are maybe a little bit slow to coming to this particular party because they have a very structured bureaucratic approach. How can we eliminate some of that bureaucracy? What's our list from the playbook of design thinking?
Eliminating means being aware of. So are we aware of this bureaucracy in the first place is like the overriding question, you know, and is it a kind of self-inflicted, perhaps how we define leadership in the organization? Sophie said, you know, I'm a manager, but we're very flat. So I think that shows that the leadership there doesn't take, you know, roles which say, you know, as a leader, I have to take the burden of leadership and I have to make decisions and I have to be this powerful person. I think spreading, I guess, the leadership across your team is really good leadership. So encouragement really works here. So like big companies, big archetypal companies have this kind of, you might say, decision making is top down, it's structured from management cultures, employees aren't empowered, perhaps independent voices are discouraged as a distraction from productivity or doing the day job, and strategy is like from the top down. So I think it's giving a reason for employees to engage through customer engagement. So by employees such as UX teams being on the front line, talking to the customers, using that as feed in to the decision making in the organization is really what, I guess, undermines this bureaucracy, you know. So empowering all the bottom up stuff, which is fundamentally your customers are the bottom of the bottom, you know, bring them into the conversations, means you can overcome that kind of bureaucracy.
Last word to our guest, Sophie from Confused.com on this one then. How do you, in your team, how do you eliminate all of that red tape and nonsense?
I think as a team in general, we are there to challenge things. So we're there to be innovative and encourage it in other teams. So there's no good innovation being siloed in one team. It needs to spread out. So yeah, part of what we do is to challenge things and always ask why we're doing this. Sometimes not to be difficult, just to, so that we can get the answers. If you don't find out the reason why something's happening, how are you going to know how to improve the user experience for it? Or to get customers, you know, to get into their mindset. So yeah, I guess that is my answer, really. We're just there to challenge, and we'll continue to do that.
Well, that sounds pretty good to me. At the top of the podcast, I promised you that we would attempt to give you a checklist that you could use so that you too could bring some, not only UX, but also, you know, create a culture of innovation in your organizations. And it strikes me, listening to our guest and to Phil today, that we've got some elements of that checklist. This concept of an ecosystem, call it a culture of creativity, it's got to go beyond just outputs. It's about outcomes. It's designed for the wider business model, not just the design in hand that we're working on. That quality matters throughout that process, throughout that business model, not just the speed of doing something. And that really we're talking about both a physical and a digital dimension to our activities, that it's both, you know, front end customer facing. And as Sophie has alluded to, it's also about internal, the back office, if you like. So our design-led ecosystem, as I said earlier on, creative thinking is both free and it's infinite, and we should use it all a lot more frequently. And by doing that, and by creating perhaps our ecosystem, we will enable business model agility and then the creation of a superior UX, which in turn, I think, leads us to sustainable competitiveness, which is kind of what we're going to need as we move into our post-COVID world. If you want to hear more of the Change Management Podcast, please don't forget to follow us in the normal way. And thanks for listening. And thank you especially to our guest, Sophie Evan-Hughes from Confused.com. To find out more about this podcast and our business services at USW, please visit southwales.ac.uk/business.